Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. July 26, 2019. Why study Tihah? Why study Tihah, preface to the wisdom of Kabbalah, or the study of the Ten Sefirot? Do I need to know how many angels are in heaven and what their names are? The fact is that we want to see a complete system in front of us. And therefore, it is very important to study it. We want to understand how we live in this system and become included into it by interacting with it. I affect the system and the system affects me, so I feel our connection. Therefore, I need to study it, perceiving it as a whole, closed, integral, and global system, including all worlds and spiritual objects, all forces. Everything we study is included in a single system in which I want to see myself, understanding how I affect it, and how it affects me. I want to see each of my states as a consequence of this system. It includes life in this world and other states. Everything is included in a single system. It is important to receive information about the world, its history, economy, and crises, in order to perceive the most complete picture possible and understand where we are. We know that Baal-ha-Sulam was interested in science and used all the information he had in his explanations. It is not written in vain that a Kabbalist must first study all the world sciences and only afterward will he understand what is happening above this world. Therefore, it is important to study the preface to the wisdom of Kabbalah in order to perceive the overall picture and become included into it, starting a conscious interaction with reality. From the first part of the daily Kabbalah lesson, the 16th of July 2019, Writings of Baal-ha-Sulam, Preface to the Wisdom of Kabbalah, Item 92. Michael Leitman, on Quora. Are we currently witnessing a resurgence of anti-Semitism? Yes. We see that throughout history, there are periods where the hatred of the nations of the world toward the Jews rises and falls. Moreover, such hatred is distinct to Jews, and not to Arabs or other nations, and you could say that Jewish-directed hatred specifically has risen and fallen multiple times over 1s of years. Therefore, many have researched anti-Semitism, but no one knows its causal foundation and how to solve it, and so it remains a problem. The wisdom of Kabbalah explains the reason for anti-Semitism and why it rises and falls throughout history. According to Kabbalah, anti-Semitism depends solely on the Jewish people, to the extent that the Jews come closer to their spiritual root, a united people, love your friend as yourself, who shine an example of unity to the world, a light unto nations' anti-Semitism lessons. Likewise, the more distant the Jews become from their root, anti-Semitism rises, reaching the genocidal extremes we have seen in the Holocaust and the pogroms. Anti-Semitism depends on whether the Jews attain their spiritual root, to unite as one man with one heart and reveal that sublime connection to the world. The nations of the world sense that the Jews have a certain foundation, which the Jews are keeping away from them, and that this foundation holds the key for all nations' happiness and prosperity. Thus, the nations of the world subconsciously hold a demand toward the Jewish people, that the Jews bring the abundance and truth that is locked away from them. The nations of the world think that the Jews know that they hold this key, but Jews themselves are completely unaware of it. Therefore, in our era, the wisdom of Kabbalah carries an obligation to explain the role of the Jewish people, since a future of happiness and prosperity or a future of suffering and despair for everybody, Jews and non-Jews alike, rests in the hands of the Jews uniting and passing unity to the world. The Source of All Existing. Baal-ha-Sulam. The Writings of Baal-ha-Sulam, Volume 1. The Quality of the Wisdom of the Hidden. In general, this superior principle is defined in one, unique, and unified one. It is obvious that the upper one is one. He comprises the whole of reality and all the times, past, present, and future, for one cannot give that which one does not have. Had the whole of reality and the existence of reality not been included in him, they would not have emerged from him, as is evident to any scrutinizer, and without minding that we find corruptions in the manners of the existence of reality. Indeed, know that this is the study that the sages of the hidden call one. The first to study it was Abraham the patriarch. This is explained in the book of creation and is therefore attributed to Abraham the patriarch. This means that there aren't two authorities here, good and bad, but only good. The fundamental principle of the wisdom of Kabbalah is that there is only one force, one goal, one path, and one movement, in the universe, that is, only one source, besides which nothing exists. Hence the saying, there is nothing else besides him. All that seems to us to exist besides him, is in fact, him. The fact that someone somewhere and somehow sees that something supposedly exists is just a slight misalignment, a difference from the center, when you have to combine two lines so that they hit the target slot exactly. Then, the person will again begin to feel that there is none besides the Creator. All deviations from the concept of one, unique, and unified are given to us so that we will repeatedly strive to confirm it and merge ourselves with it. This is the goal of our development. Development is to enter and dissolve in this unity. It does not fit into our mind, memory, nor in our analytical capabilities, because for this we need to completely redo our approach, our view of the goal, the world, space, time, motion, and in general, everything. We should relate everything to only one sensation: I exist or he alone. Question: so, I do not exist. Is there only him? Answer: of course, I do not exist. I exist only when I differ from him or when I merge with him. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 27th of January 2019. New Life number 1122. Living in a tribe.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about connection. Dr. Lightman speaks a lot about connection, and in order to understand what does he mean by connection, we'll try to look at the animal world and see what can we learn from there on our way to a better life. Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, in the animal world, we really see many different kinds of animals working as groups, like ants, bees, and many others. And on this show, we'd like to learn from all the connections in nature something about our connection, the connection in the human system, and see where can we further develop our connection? What are the next levels of the human connection? And we see that there are animals that, by the way, are a minority that hunt in the form of a pack or a group, like wolves or chimpanzees. And also man in prehistoric times, when we used to hunt, were also animals that used to hunt in a group. Hunting as a group demands many different things of that group: social skills, special kind of communication, the ability to take decisions as a collective. And again, it's a relatively rare phenomenon among animals. And I'd like to ask, are animals that hunt as a group more developed than animals that hunt on their own as individuals? How do you see this? Well, I don't think that it has to do with the level of development, because they don't develop, but each of them carries out their own role, their specific place in the system. But in regard to all of mankind, then of course you can say that there is development. But is it personal, individual development along with social development? This is the question, and there are many questions here. So if you're asking, is it a part of the axis of development, then not really. But it depends on each and every species. Where does it get its nourishment from? From its spiritual root. So the question is, an animal that hunts in a group, is it on a higher level of connection than an animal that hunts on its own? Of course, because that it hunts in a group is already a result, so there's no question. But are we in such a development where those animals that today hunt on their own will ever become animals that hunt in a group? No. Okay, so everyone has their place. Yeah. Each is a branch of its spiritual root as a copy, and that's that. In regard to the axis of development, an animal that hunts in a group, what advantage does it have? We understand that an individual animal that hunts on its own will not go through the same developmental process, but if we look at the entire axis, then there is a higher degree of connection here. There is a higher level of connection, for sure, but it is a result of each and every one of those individuals that is a part of that connection, even if we're talking about ants, that on their own, they cannot carry out any action. No animal in nature can carry out any action on its own. No, not every animal, but any animal that is a part of a group cannot succeed on its own. Okay, let's take a single ant in an ant colony. Ant colony, everyone's working together. Let's take a look at an individual ant. Maybe you can tell me. What does an ant in an ant colony feel? It feels that it has to carry out the order that the ant colony is as if giving it now. And this is what each and every ant feels, and therefore there is no scrutiny, dispute, making decisions, but it's completely, perfectly operated by that collective brain, mind, that operates and activates the entire colony. How does it perceive that order? Instinctively. It doesn't activate itself in order to perceive or not to perceive. It doesn't. No. So how does it know what to do? It's connected. It's connected to the entire colony and gets orders from it. How is it connected? It feels. It feels that this is what it has to do, and it doesn't make any decisions in this regard, or it has no doubts, but this is simply how it grasps it. It feels itself, or it feels everyone, and feels itself in terms of what does it have to do, in what direction to go, in order to be in harmony, in a harmonious connection with everyone. When we're talking about an ant colony or a beehive, it's called a superorganism, which means that beyond the particular individuals that comprise that unit, it really functions as an entire organism, as a unit in and of itself. And what's unique about them is that they work together in order to preserve the entire group and not for their own sake, because they have nothing for their own sake. Their entire inclination is to carry out what that group needs. What's the difference between them and an animal working individually? An animal working individually, working on its own, works on its own. And this one doesn't work individually, but in a group, providing the group with everything that the group needs and getting from the group everything that it has to receive. But each and every animal that is not a part of a group, it nonetheless carries out the orders of nature, only not through that group, but directly from its spiritual root. And what does that single animal feel like, a lion, for example? It doesn't feel anything. He doesn't understand where does it come from, but he simply realizes his instincts, carries them out. That's called the orders of nature, that he doesn't reveal their root. Beyond what he personally feels, does he have a broader feeling, or he feels only himself? He feels that he himself is acting in a certain environment, and how to arrange that environment, how to use it in order to succeed. And an ant working in an ant colony, does it feel something beyond itself? Yes, it doesn't feel itself, but it feels the colony. So, where are the boundaries? The boundary is that in a group, the body is the entire group, suppose a billion ants together, and a lion is on his own, and an ant doesn't mind what will specifically happen to it in particular. It doesn't feel it. So she feels only the entire group. Yeah. Okay, now I want to ask about the human part. I just want to add that if that ant colony needs for that ant to burn now, then it goes in and burns. Makes no calculations. Okay, so let's go to us human beings that are a bit of a more evolved animal, and we'd expect that if there are different levels of development in terms of the connection, it's not the development of connection. They don't feel that they're connected. They feel that this is how they have to be. That's it. And what about us? There's no connection between them because they have no evil inclination. There's no disconnection between them. This is simply how they instinctively exist. That's it. And man? About man, we'll talk separately. Okay, so let's do it. Okay, so man. If we're talking about man, and it's not some group that lived in a cave thousands and thousands of years ago, but that he already came out of there, his ego developed him. He's no longer a caveman. He no longer lives there, but he became more isolated with his family. He, his wife, children, maybe also the parents. Afterwards, maybe not with the parents, next to them, maybe then more distant from them, with his wife and children. Afterwards, maybe he sends his children away at a certain age. It depends on the degree of the development of the ego on the human level. That in that there is a large difference between people. And then we say that the steady group among people is the family. Usually it's the grandparents, parents, husband and wife, and the children. And grandchildren. Meaning there's six generations here. It's not simple. Three generations. Six. How? Grandparents, mom and dad, husband and wife, children and grandchildren. Five groups. But actually there are six because also the grandchildren have children. Right, the great-grandchildren, but then man's already. But still. The great-grandchildren, they're a part of the group. This is what interests you. No, because you said that we missed that sixth part. Yes. So all the six together. It's a family. We call it a family. So what is there in the family? That all throughout history, we discover a special closeness between them, where they are willing to contribute to each other, not on the human level that sometimes this is how we help each other, but they have some kind of a commitment, like an insurance policy. that as if each of them is committed to the others, obligated to the others. Previously you said that we're not like cavemen. Right, because cavemen, they lived instinctively, like animals, and then they didn't feel that there's any difference between them. Even the women and children, it was all collective. Whereas later, when the ego grows, man is the only animal in which the ego is growing. And that started separating him from others. And one way or another, in order to exist, he needs to live in a certain way. There's the need for sex, for health, for this, for that. When he's young, he needs parents. When he's old, he needs his children, and so on and so forth. Meaning there's a kind of consent here, agreement, natural one, that comes from nature, that this is how we keep ourselves for thousands of generations. This component, the ego, that develops in man a feeling of separation, that he's separate from the rest of his species. It develops a sense of an individual, that I'm unique and so on, and then I build my own group, my family. When we came out of the caves, and we developed as families, let's say as families, there are other different kinds, like nations and tribes and so on, but only now that it's going to break the family cell. Yes. That commitment that you talked about. Yes. And where does it come from? The ego is growing on the one hand. On the other hand, we've developed such technologies in life that we don't need help. Okay, so what is this ego? The ego that goes and grows, the force that rejects me from those that are like me. This is the minimum ego that it rejects. Later, there are more developed forms when I want to use them and so on. So the ego also develops. At first it only rejects, then I want to use them. And then by the ego we're connected into nations, countries, different things. There's competition, an ego that brings closer, an ego that separates. Do animals have an ego? No. Because we started as animals in a cave. There is no ego in animals. When we lived in caves, did we have an ego? Cavemen, meaning in prehistorical times. Yeah, did man have ego then? No. Just like an ant feels in its colony, this is how man felt in his collective environment. So we lived and were operated like animals. Yes, we were animals. Okay, and since then, to this day, what changed? What happened to the ego? That it grows from generation to generation, meaning what? That a person feels that he's becoming more and more isolated from others. That in each and every moment, from year to year, or from generation to generation, there is this force that rejects him from others, and he starts saying, how can he use them, and so on. What's the difference between a person that's becoming more and more separated from others and works for his own sake, and any other animal that works for its sake, like a lion? Or you mean man today or caveman? Today, people today that developed and became more and more separated, that he wants to use all of mankind to his own benefit. And a lion that doesn't live in a group or anything, the same. He wants to use, no, but a person who wants to use others, he does it by the power of the ego, and a lion does it by the power of nature. This is what I'm trying to understand. An animal remains within the boundaries of the laws of nature that dictate what he does, and man searches for how can he develop at the expense of others. And he derives pleasure from receiving from others and even by harming others, because then he feels superior to others. Okay, I want to ask about the human ability to converse, to talk. up until now we talked about, suppose, ants. You said that it doesn't feel itself as an individual at all, but only as a part of the collective. Now, man's ego grew, he started feeling separate from others. So there's me, I'm separate, I feel myself separate from you, and the ability to talk developed in people. Better say communicate, because talking is only one part, even though that it's very important, but it's only one part of the different forms of communication between people. How is the communication between people different than the communication between animals? Because man develops his communication with other people according to the levels of the ego that develop in him. Can you explain? The ego that awakens and that demands me to every time connect in a certain way with others. Others meaning not the still, the vegetative and the animate, but other people. And so accordingly I develop language in our mutual connection, in my mutual connection with others, and different other forms. It could be literature, music, different things. The main thing is in order to express myself and connect to others. I want to look at a certain specific connection between people and scrutinize it a bit. Let's take an orchestra that works together like one body. If they're really good, you can feel that they're working as one. There are many individuals, each does his own thing, but all in all, they're like one body. Okay, now I want to compare it to an ant and its colony that feels no boundaries. It doesn't feel that there's me and the collective body. There's only the collective general body, and it doesn't feel separate from it, but it only feels what it has to do. I asked, how does it know? You said, it comes from within. It has no scrutinies, it doesn't make decisions, no resistance, nothing. It simply feels, what does it have to do now? Like an individual and one body. It doesn't think whether to do something or not. It doesn't have something like that. Okay, now let's look at that orchestra. Suppose that they're really good. They're professionals. We look at them and we see that they're playing as one. What happens there? It's serious work. Serious work for each and every one of them, because each is an egoist, but he has to understand that without connecting with the others, he won't succeed. And besides, there's the conductor that controls them in a very strict manner and connects them under his control. And therefore, they're willing to bend under him and to annul their personal ego in being a single individual, but to be a part of a group. And animals don't feel this kind of control, like ants in a colony, for example. No, animals and all the rest of the creatures in them, besides man, in all of them, it happens in a way that nature forces them to act that way. It doesn't ask them. So there's no one that controls them or is trying to control them or someone who controls. No, these two forces do not exist in animals. It's not that they have an ego and that they overcome the ego. It's something that doesn't exist in animals. And what does this process allow? It allows development to the human species. That every time the ego is bigger, and every time he has to restrain it and rise higher above it, and by that he develops. Right, left, this is how he ascends. Whereas in animals, there's no such thing. Okay, now I want to ask, many times, you explain that the contemporary man has different problems in life that eventually are supposed to advance us toward a new state where people, instead of just living for themselves, will become more connected. It's not something that's rooted in nature that will necessarily come upon us. This is something that we'll have to create ourselves, to understand, to agree, and do. Okay, so I want to ask about this. We will have to consciously understand that our more advanced place is to create connections. Yes. What kind of connections are we supposed to consciously make? As a group in which each understands and feels all the others, even though that this group feels hate and rejection towards one another, but they want to exist as one man and one heart. As one man and one heart. Not really so, because it's impossible, because the big ego separates us in our hate toward one another, and we keep our connection above the ego by way of love covers for all crimes, that the connection covers any rejection, and this is how we'll exist as one group, like a colony of ants or bees or whoever. So it's like any other group of animals, but the difference is that each person that will be a part of this future human collective or group resists the connection? Yes. So he's both connected, but he also resists the connection? Yeah. Imagine that you have like this big chunk of bees in a beehive, and inside the beehive is full of hate and rejection, and it's all black. And along with it, they connect upon it and love and support and are connected. And as much as they hate each other, they love each other even more. So, going back to us, why do we have to make this connection then if each of us does aspire to be in and of himself? Why do we build the connection? Because in this connection, in the love that covers the hate, we attain the root of the love and the hate, which is one root that's called the upper force, the creator, and we identify with him. That if I overcome my hate by love, then immediately I'm in contact with him, in adhesion. What does it have to do with the different processes that are going on in nature? It's a part of evolution or what? This is something that we come to by or through the evolution of our egoistic desire, of that ego. Yes, that's distancing us from one another, that's giving us a really hard life, even up to the point where we destroy each other. And by that, we start understanding that we have no choice. We can't get rid of our ego, of our feeling of mutual rejection. And that we have to reach connection up to the point of love, and therefore love covers for all crimes. This is what we have to do, and then we'll reach love another as thyself, even though that I hate the other from the bottom of my heart. And I have to reach him with a love that's even greater than the hate that will connect us. And then, in the connection between the hate and the love, between the two, I discover the upper force, the creator, and I'm in connection with him. That's the reward. This upper force, the creator, the reward, he's related to nature somehow. What kind of a force is it? He's above nature. And then I understand that the still, the vegetative and the animate exist in nature, and Adam, literally meaning man in Hebrew, but also meaning to be similar to the creator, rises above nature to connection with the creator. And he's like the creator in what? In the force of love that he developed actually because of the force of hate. The creator is related to love? Yes, he is the force of love, the general positive force in nature. Last question. It means that in that group that we have to build, in that collective, we have to create that collective. We can create such a connection between us that there will actually be opposite forces that pull each of us to himself, but also to connection, And inside this entire stew, we start feeling a certain force that isn't mine or yours or his, but whose is it? Of the Creator, the upper force that exists in nature, sustains and keeps nature, and by the hate and love between us, we connect to Him. Dr. Leitman, thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, we wish you all the best.